Hello again and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. We are here 7 days a week to help you learn and improve your American English. We suggest you use our website to read along as you listen to the audio. You can even print the stories and save the podcasts for later. Today we return to Nigeria with more information about the rebel group Boko Haram. An international humanitarian organization provides us with information about the harm done by the group and where attacks have taken place. Then we travel to Syria. The United Nations reports about women in that war-torn country and how they have been especially affected by the violence. The news may be good or bad, but we bring it to you as it is each day on VOA. Now, here is part one. Human Rights Watch says the Nigerian rebel group Boko Haram has killed more than 2,000 people in the first 6 months of this year. It says the group's attacks are crimes against humanity. Christopher Cruz has been studying the most recent information and joins us with details.
Corinne Dufka is West Africa Director of Human Rights Watch. She says Boko Haram is making war against the people of northeastern Nigeria. She says this aggression is causing what she calls a staggering human cost.
We have documented 95 attacks on 70 towns and villages.
She said most of the attacks happened in northeastern Nigeria. Boko Haram kidnapped an estimated 276 schoolgirls from that area in April. Boko Haram has also carried out attacks in the capital, Abuja. Ms. Dufka says her group used media reports and information from human rights groups and others to confirm that Boko Haram has caused more than 2,000 deaths since January.
We analyzed these reports looking at, again, credible reports of morgue workers, local officials, civilians, witnesses who had seen the bodies buried or registered. And we came up with this figure, which is probably conservative.
She says the attacks have greatly increased since a state of emergency was declared in three northern states. The emergency conditions took effect in Borno, Adamawa, and Yobe states in May 2013. Human Rights Watch says there has been a sharp increase this year in deaths from bomb explosions, including suicide bombings. Ms. Dufka says the attacks should be considered crimes against humanity. She said the crimes include murder, torture, rape, and other actions done as part of what Human Rights Watch calls a widespread or systematic attack.
And we believe that the nature of these attacks, the similarity, the organized nature in which they're being committed, suggests that they really are crimes against humanity.
One of Boko Haram's actions included kidnapping the schoolgirls from the town of Chibok. Human Rights Watch says there have also been many attacks on schools where male students were killed. In February, an attack on the federal government college in Yobe State killed 59 boys. Ms. Dufka says Human Rights Watch and other groups also have confirmed abuses by Nigerian security forces. It says they include use of unreasonable force, detentions without charge, the burning of homes, and killing suspected Boko Haram supporters.
The government of Nigeria, regardless of how egregious these attacks are, they have to abide by international law when responding to them.
She says the Nigerian government must not only protect the population from Boko Haram, she says Nigeria must also protect against security forces that may operate outside the law. I'm Christopher Cruz.
A United Nations study says women are now heading more than 145,000 refugee families from the conflict in Syria. The UN Refugee Agency looked at Syrian families in four other Middle Eastern countries, Egypt, Lebanon, Iraq, and Jordan. It found that these women, their children, and other relatives are trapped in a world of poverty, loneliness, and fear. Ana Mateo tells us more.
A United Nations survey found that one in four Syrian women have been forced to flee their homes because of fighting. It says these women face the possibility of spending their lives alone in exile. They do not have husbands who can help care for them and their families. This situation would be difficult for anyone, but it is especially hard for Syrian women who come from a very traditional, conservative society. In such a society, a woman without a man has no rank or standing. She could be treated as an outcast, someone who is rejected by her community. Melissa Fleming works for the UN Refugee Agency. She says these women are extremely worried about how they will live and support their families alone in a foreign country. Ms. Fleming uses words like isolated, vulnerable, and frightened in describing the situations of these women.
Their biggest anxiety was about money, resources. They also felt very isolated, frightened to move around out of the house. They felt vulnerable to harassment, vulnerable to attacks by men. So it's the climate of being a refugee in many cases is extremely worrying and very tough.
The UN report is based on the personal statements of 135 women over a three-month period. The survey found the majority of Syrian refugees in the Middle East do not live in camps. Officials say the camps would provide them with a safer environment, meals, and other assistance. Instead, the report says, the refugee women live in towns and cities, in damaged shelters, and rooms where vehicles are normally kept. Some women pay extremely high rates for rented rooms. It says only one-fifth of refugee women have paid work, and many find it hard to get a job. It says many women face abuse, are subject to rape, sexual abuse, and other forms of aggression. Melissa Fleming says many female-headed households do not have enough money for food, housing, and major expenses. They are forced to choose between sending their children to school or out to work.
This is also another huge worry for these women. First of all, their children have seen things that no child should ever see back home in Syria during the war. They come out, they're traumatized, they've lost friends. And the thing that they all want most is for that child to heal and to go back to school. But they can't afford to send that child back to school, so they send their child and think, hopefully this is temporary.